Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to take a look at your eyes today on the show and vision care. And our guest back with us once again, Dr. Sarah Nels. She specializes in laser vision correction surgeries, things like intralasic, custom LASIK, PRK. She also specializes in diagnosing and treating disorders of the cornea, including cornea transplantation. In fact, she did one for me a few years back. She's a professor in the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. And as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in. What questions and concerns do you have about laser surgery, maybe? Have you had this type of surgery? Are you happy with the results? Are you considering a cornea transplant? Maybe cataract surgery? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Sarah Nels, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Great to be here, Larry.
So what are the main diseases that cause loss of eyesight?
Well, in the adult world, in developed countries, unfortunately, it's age-related macular degeneration. In the developing world, cataracts are a very common cause of vision loss, which is, in most cases, completely treatable. Unfortunately, we still have some limited options to treat macular degeneration.
Yeah. Well, what causes macular degeneration?
It's not well understood. Aging, of course, is the number one factor. There is a not yet completely clear genetic component. So if you have a family member that has ARMD or age-related macular degeneration, you might be more likely to also develop it. But it doesn't mean you're absolutely going to experience that in your aging years. So it's an area that is under intense research because we have treatments, but they still are somewhat limited in restoring or repairing vision. And there's a wonderful amount of research going on at the UW in this area.
So are there symptoms? What symptoms might someone have who is starting to experience macular degeneration?
So it could just be a gradual decline in vision at first, but if it changes to a more aggressive type called wet macular degeneration, people will notice distortion in straight lines. For example, looking at a door frame, instead of looking straight, it might look bent. And that is actually a sign that you should seek treatment in a pretty quick fashion, because the injection therapy that can be done for this condition does better if it's started earlier.
You mentioned it's age related, but can it happen or occur in younger people?
It would be unusual in a person under the age of 50. It is certainly more common in people that reach their 70s or 80s. Another new treatment for this involves cataract surgery. We're a study site for an implantable miniature telescope that can be done at the time of cataract surgery. It would be placed in one eye to basically magnify the view of print, the view of other people's faces, the view of your laptop or computer screen.
Wow.
And is something that is somewhat new in this field as a potential treatment.
Oh, something maybe I'll have to consider here down the road. Actually, Amy in Door County has a question relating to cataracts, so let's go there. Amy, hi.
Hi. Yes, my question is, I was told at my last eye exam, which I think was in May, that I have the beginning of a cataract, but the professional also said that we probably wouldn't do anything about it for possibly 10 years, and I'm just beginning to question that and wonder why that is, because the fact of the matter is that especially nighttime driving, I don't even really feel that safe doing it at this point, because the lights, the headlights and all the lamps have such an extensive flash that it really kind of blinds me. And the other telling thing when I had that exam was they said, you know, do things seem dark? And Yes, I am always the first one at the office to want to turn some lights on. But I'm more concerned about the nighttime driving, and I don't really want to wait 10 whole years to get something corrected.
Okay, Amy, thank you for calling. And a lot of people can relate to you, I think, are with you about the traffic lights and so forth and headlights. But Dr. Nails?
Absolutely. Those are textbook symptoms of cataract at various stages. And I think your eye care provider was thinking the cataract perhaps was mild to the view on exam. But nighttime driving is a big factor for people. And if you're finding major functional limitations in your ability to do activities you need to do on a daily basis, there is a glare test called a brightness acuity test that can simulate nighttime driving conditions. And if your vision drops significantly with this test, we would potentially consider doing cataract surgery. It's all about function, vision and function. And everyone feels a little bit differently about how much the cataract might be affecting their vision. But if you have to do a lot of driving at night and simply don't feel safe, you should potentially consider another evaluation.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Amy, good luck. Thank you. John in Wausau will give you a chance. Hi, John.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a sensitivity to fluorescence and particularly compact fluorescent light bulbs, and then also different types of computer screens and TVs. For example, I cannot use any Samsung phones. I only have to use Apple phones because as soon as I use them for 10 minutes, my eyes just super eye strain and I get a headache. And if I use an Apple phone, I can look at it all day long and don't have any problems. But and I talked to several doctors and nobody seems to have any clue what might be.
What might be going on? What do you think, Dr. Nels?
Well, sensitivity to fluorescent lights is fairly common. And a lot of people don't like being in a big, you know, box room with fluorescent lights. Sensitivity to computer screens and cell phones really varies individually. And I think a treatment that you could try is experimenting with different tinted lenses. Some people will do well with a blue tinted lens versus a yellow tint. And it does seem to be very individual, but that would be a solution. Although I guess you can clearly stick with the Apple phone, perhaps, if that works better for you.
John, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. I want to go back to macular degeneration. Are there a variety of treatments for this, for macular degeneration?
The basic treatment is taking a vitamin supplement. Hmm. It's called the Age-Related Eye Disease Study 2, which was a large study that was performed. There was a first study followed by a second that showed taking this vitamin supplementation did indeed reduce the risk of developing more severe macular degeneration. Once the wet or severe macular degeneration starts, patients tend to need to be seen monthly to every 6 weeks and receive injections in their eye of there's a few different drugs, but anti-VEGF, or it's a growth factor that prevents blood vessel growth in the back of the eye. And that becomes quite intense for patients to have to find the time to come in so frequently for these injections.
Yeah.
But these injections are successful in many cases at stabilizing the vision.
Are they painful?
You know, it sounds terrible, right? To get a shot in your eye. But, you know, we have some effective numbing techniques, and I think people are generally surprised at how well they do with the injections.
So,
it's the frequency that's difficult.
Yeah. So what can we do? Is there anything that any of us can do? You said vitamins may be a way to, a certain vitamin might be a way to prevent or at least slow it down. And what was the vitamin again?
right. Yeah. So no, I think in general, eating a healthy antioxidant laden diet, green leafy vegetables, omega-3s, that is a good lifestyle choice and may reduce the risk of macular degeneration. We recommend the vitamin only for people that are already showing signs of macular degeneration. The vitamin supplements have not been studied yet in eyes that have no sign of macular degeneration. So that's not known. The main a couple specific ingredients in the vitamin supplementation is lutein and zeaxanthin. And those are supplements that are quite concentrated in the macula, the back of the eye.
So, and typically if you're looking at a bottle, or is this something that needs to be prescribed?
It is over the counter, but it should say that it's the age-related eye disease study 2, we call it AREDS, 2 formula. And most of the different brands of vitamins will have this on their label, that they're following the AREDS 2 formula.
AREDS 2 formula. Okay, there we go. Richard in Minocqua, we'll go to you.
Yes. I have a question that deals with macular dystrophy versus degeneration.
And what's your question? Or what's the difference?
Well, yes, I'd like a comment on the differences of it, yes.
Sure. So macular dystrophies also occur in the same location. The macula is the central part of the retina where most of the center of our vision happens. And a macular dystrophy, those tend to be genetic or inheritable. They're much less common than macular degeneration, but certainly impact the same area.
Richard, does that help?
Yes, it helps. I kind of did that. I guess I wanted a little more detail, or if she could give me a source of information, you know.
To look more into it. Okay.
A retina specialist would be able to diagnose and help with that. Oftentimes photos are taken. And depending on the type of dystrophy, there may not be a lot that can be done therapeutically. Unfortunately, these tend to be slowly progressive and very difficult to treat.
Hmm. Richard, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at eye and vision care with our guest today, Dr. Sarah Nels, ophthalmologist and professor in the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. You can join in with your questions or concerns at 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org. Trina LaSousa, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking eye and vision care today with our guest, Dr. Sarah Nels. You can join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Lynn in Sun Prairie, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Yes, I have an older sister who had arteritis, and I understand it's arthritis of the eye. She has lost vision in that eye. I wondered where that comes from, what to do, all
sure.
About it, I guess.
Yeah.
So there is a condition called temporal arteritis, which can be a very challenging disease to treat. It's inflammation in the arterial system that affects the eye as well as the brain. It is an autoimmune inflammatory condition that, when recognized and caught early, can be treated with some different medications, including IV or oral prednisone or steroids, and also can be treated with some other medications that suppress the immune system. It's classically diagnosed from the onset of a headache, where it actually hurts to chew food and potentially hurts to comb your hair, because the arteritis is affecting the arteries in the scalp. And visual acuity loss is very difficult to recover. So if you're having any symptoms such as those, that I just mentioned, you do want to seek treatment pretty rapidly.
Pretty quick, like yesterday. Yeah. Okay. Lynn, thank you for calling. Joel in Friesland, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Joel.
Hi. Thank you for this talk today. I was wondering, about 10 years ago, I really wasn't a candidate for correct surgery with autism. And I was wondering if anything has changed in those 10 years. And I also was wondering if if you have any information on the effects of cannabis on the eye.
Sure. So laser vision correction is done to treat nearsightedness, farsightedness, and astigmatism. We do screen patients to see if a person is a candidate for this surgery. We do a measurement called corneal topography, which maps out the shape and the thickness of the cornea. And that's a key study in determining whether somebody is a candidate or not. Astigmatism is treatable with LASIK surgery, but there are some patterns of astigmatism that may be less treatable if they're not regular. There is a newer also option for people that were told they were not a candidate for LASIK surgery, which is called the EVO lens implant. It's basically an implantable contact lens that can treat nearsightedness and astigmatism. And by doing that from the inside of the eye, it doesn't put the cornea at risk for other complications. So maybe you should seek out another evaluation and see if you're a candidate for something else.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the Joel was talking about 10 years ago. I mean, I'm sure things have gotten, what are the best words, more precise, less problematic, perhaps, than they were 10 years ago?
They are more precise. We now use a laser for all the steps of surgery, and the laser that can make the LASIK flap is so precise it allows us to make very thin flaps, which allows for greater treatment of myopia. And we also have the ability to apply a customized treatment to patients' eyes, which is especially advantageous for astigmatism corrections.
So a lot better than it was 10 years ago, Joel. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Kevin in Northwest Wisconsin. Your turn. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I'm curious if the doctor knows of the implantable device that's made for treating wet macular degeneration in the eye.
So in the course of development and studies, the goal is to reduce, like I was speaking about earlier, the frequency of injections. So yes, there are some micro implants that can be placed in the eye that provide a slow release of medication. This is also being done for some eyes that have inflammation and need chronic steroid use. So this is being worked on. It's a feat of bioengineering, biomaterial engineering, and is something that is actively undergoing research.
Is it available now?
Well, I believe only in research trials.
Yeah, but it's coming.
It should be. I mean, it would be very much a time saver for patients and perhaps maybe provide more steady treatment that could be an advantage to those with macular degeneration.
Yeah, there you go, Kevin. Thank you for calling. Dave in Escanaba, Michigan, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for my call. Merry Christmas and happy hump day.
To you as well.
I have two questions, I guess. I'm like 53 years old. My eyesight has been going. I wear cheaters to read, right? 2.5s. So is macular degeneration something you can go to the eye doctor for in one visit and they can tell you have it, or is it something you need multiple visits for? And also I have a condition. I've had it for years. I'm not sure my whole life or not, but you mentioned the angular doorway or the warped doorways.
Yeah.
So if I'm watching the river flow, or something move like a racetrack or cars, and then I look up at the trees or something, I do get that. It's like a visual effect of warping. It's almost like the trees are flowing. You said the warped drive was something to worry about. Would that be something to worry about?
Well, to try to answer both questions, I think, first of all, it's very normal when people reach their late 40s or early 50s that the need for reading glasses or bifocals happens. It's, we'll say, maybe an unfortunate part of aging, but it happens to everyone to some degree. Yes, you would be able to be looked at and told if you have any problems with your retina or your macula. I think it would be fairly unlikely at age 53. And I think the visual phenomenon that you're describing with seeing flow after you've been looking at something like a river is more of a interpretation in the brain, probably less related to something going on in your eye.
All right. There you go, Dave. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call from Carolyn in Lake Geneva. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was born premature in 1967 at a rural hospital in Wisconsin. And I, all of my life, have worn pretty strong prescription. I can see about 6 inches in front of me without glasses, and then it's very poor. As I'm getting older, I've noticed that, you know, I've got the need for readers, can't see a menu in low light, that kind of thing. But my glasses always got stronger every year when I got a new prescription until about 40. And then maybe in my late 40s, early 50s, I started with, you know, needing to use readers. Now that they have a lot more research out about preemies and such, can I expect a worse eyesight than what's normal for aging?
Well, it sounds like you had, hopefully mild, but you had something called retinopathy of prematurity that happens in babies that are born early. And it creates a very common high myopia or a high amount of nearsightedness. And I think that was reflected in your experience with glasses and changing over years. It may be in the future, if you are to develop some cataract, that can be reversed with the lens that's placed in your eye. So when we do cataract surgery, we measure the eye for its axial length, how long the eye is, and how the shape of the cornea looks. And then we can customize the choice of a lens implant that can take away nearsightedness, astigmatism, and farsightedness. Not to say you need to look forward to cataracts, but I think waiting over time, that may be something that becomes a future option for you and your vision.
Oh, there you go, Carolyn. Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Winona, Minnesota. Talk with Nan next. Hi, Nan.
Hi there. Sorry about that. Merry Christmas. Anyway, I was going to tell you that when I was 43 years old, and I'm 72 now, I developed a lattice tear in my eye and a retinal detachment because I had started wearing contacts for the nearsightedness, and they said that it changed the shape of my eye to the point where it tore the retina. And so, of course, I had that surgery, and then about 4 years later, it's happened the same on the other eye. And I was wondering if that is common with nearsightedness, because I have family that is questioning it. And so now I'm taking the shots from, they said I had macular degeneration after that. And so I'm taking the shots every 10 weeks, and I'm stable. But I just had a question about the nearsightedness part of it.
Yeah.
Oh, dear, your retinas have been through a lot, it sounds like.
Oh, man.
Yes, nearsightedness, especially a high amount of nearsightedness, is associated with the potential for a retinal tear, which can lead to a detachment. I don't think your contact lens wear caused a detachment. A contact lens is worn on the surface of the eye, but it probably is the inherent nearsightedness that you had that created that risk factor.
Nan, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Christy in Delavan will go to you. Hi, Christy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. About
6 months ago, I was diagnosed by my ophthalmologist with filamentary, is it keratitis or keratosis, where the filaments flake off my cornea and impair vision. So like once every 3 weeks now, I'm driving to Madison to have those manually taken out. And I'm wondering if there's any other treatment for that besides steroids, which I'm not comfortable being on long term, and also if it's an autoimmune condition.
Great question. And you're right. This is a condition called filamentary keratitis, and it is most commonly associated with very severe dry eye. There certainly could be an autoimmune connection to a condition called Sjogren's syndrome, which creates a very dry eye and dry mouth. It's, I know, a miserable condition to have because those filaments create a lot of discomfort as well as blurry vision. For some people, bridging with what we call a bandage contact lens can be helpful with the concomitant use of a topical antibiotic. You're right, steroids can sometimes quiet down inflammation, but we don't want to keep people on those long term in general. But the root cause of treating severe dry eye, which has several different therapies, might be very beneficial for you.
Yeah, there you go, Christy. Thank you so much for calling. Jill in Milwaukee will give you a chance. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about my cataract, which I had both of them done, and I was severely nearsighted and had glasses all my life, so having my cataracts done was like a miracle. I went in to get my annual exam, and my eye doctor told me that my right cataract is becoming cloudy, and evidently that's common. It's not really bothering me, but now that you told me it's there, I notice it. And I'm wondering, A, what's the procedure to have it fixed? And how long can I wait to have it fixed? In other words, will it happen again? Should I wait till it's so bad I can't see, or what?
Yeah.
And I'll let you answer.
Sure. Great question. This is something that's very common after cataract surgery. So during cataract surgery, we remove the cloudy lens of the eye. And then, as I mentioned, we place a lens implant. That lens implant will stay clear for a lifetime, but it's being held in a capsule that used to hold the cataract. And that capsule behind the lens implant can sometimes develop a haze or cloudiness. And it happens to 20% of eyes after cataract surgery, and it's very treatable. We use a laser. It's called a YAG laser in the office. It's a pretty quick procedure to break the scar tissue up with the laser. It essentially removes the scar tissue and creates another, you know, clear path or clear window for you to use your vision. And it's a procedure that doesn't really have any downtime. There's no restrictions on activity. You'll notice the improvement in vision by the next day. Most eyes don't need any eye drops after. And it's also a painless procedure. It takes about 10 minutes to do in the office. So
wow.
Consider that if you are being bothered by your vision.
Wow. Jill, thanks for calling. That sounds like good news, Jill.
Can I ask, should I wait till it's really bothering me? Or, I mean, can it be done a number of times, or should I just have it done now?
Well, fortunately, it's incredibly rare to ever recur or grow back. So it's in the vast majority of eyes, it's a one-time, one-and-done procedure. I would say if the vision's bothering you, then yes, it's very reasonable to have it done. If you have found that your vision's doing fine, then you probably don't need the laser done, at least yet.
Yeah, there you go, Jill. It's up to you a bit there. John in Richfield, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Basically, I've probably got pretty much the same question Jill had, but my details would be that I had cataract lens replacement done in March, and I lost my glasses, had to go in to get a prescription for new glasses a week ago, and was a little shocked that the ophthalmologist said you're just too fuzzy. I can't correct you to 20/20. Am I right in assuming this just requires a visit to the eye surgeon and the same? I want to take that call, Sandy. That's at any rate. I assume it's the same treatment that Jill would require.
It sounds like it, yeah. And especially if your optometrist is referring you back to the surgeon that did your cataract surgery, that does indeed sound like you need that same YAG laser procedure, and it should take away the fuzziness.
Yeah. So there you go, John. Thank you. And Henry in Dodgeville, your turn. Hi, Henry.
Yeah, hi. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I just wanted to bring to attention to your listening to audience, a condition which is called an eye tracking, eye convergence issue that gets misdiagnosed as ADD, ADHD. So I've had about 15 to 20 clients that have been diagnosed with that, some of them as old as 53 years old. So I just wanted to bring that to the audience's attention, that if your kids are having trouble reading, it could be because their eyes aren't tracking words across a page. It usually doesn't show up until, you know, material gets a little bit more difficult, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. But it can be pretty devastating to these kids because, you know, all of a sudden they can't learn at the same rate as everybody else, and they lose focus in class, so on and so forth.
Yeah. Henry, thanks for coming.
The easy fix for it is just going to your optometrist and having him check for it, and then the fix for it is putting prisms in regular eyeglasses, which allow the eyes to focus. So,
Henry, thank you. And Sarah, are you familiar with this?
Yes, thanks, Henry. This is a condition called convergence insufficiency. When you look at a piece of paper or something written in a book, your eyes turn in. Both eyes should turn in together. That's saying that they converge. And there are some people that have problem with that muscle movement that should just happen naturally. And it is indeed very treatable with glasses with prism that take care of that eye muscle weakness, per se, by bringing the text into focus for people that are young and old. Convergence insufficiency also can happen as people age.
Thanks, Henry. Appreciate those comments very much. We'll take a call from Cheryl in Bessemer, Michigan, next. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Larry. Hey, listen, I've had a hole in my retina, my right eye, and she has done surgery on it 4 times, and it's still not right. I still see, you know, everything in my right eye, instead of square, it's kind of got a waste on it. Okay. Anyways, so she wants to do surgery one more time, and I don't know if I should or not. I mean, it's not as bad as it was.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you've gotten some improvement. Yes, a macular hole, which I think is what you are likely talking about, is a condition that requires surgery to fix. Otherwise, there's a gap in the center of your vision. It depends on the stage in which the hole was found and in terms of how successful surgery can be. But as to an opinion about would a fourth surgery help, it very well may. But I would say whenever somebody questions, it's always very reasonable to get a second opinion.
Yeah, there you go, Cheryl. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's talk about cornea transplants, because you do many of them. Where's the cornea in the eye first? Just let's do a basic there.
Sure. So the cornea is the windshield to the eye. If you wear a contact lens, you're placing the contact lens on the surface of the cornea to correct vision. And it is one of the organs of the eye that helps to focus light to the back of the eye. And if it is not clear, if it becomes injured, develops a scar, or has some dystrophies that can happen, cornea transplants can help clear, basically give a clear path again for light to enter the eye.
And the transplant itself, talk about how it's performed.
Sure. So there are a few different types of transplants. We do, the most common type that I do is a partial thickness corneal transplant, which replaces a layer of water pump cells in the eye. That if you lose a critical number of these cells, the cornea swells and becomes cloudy. That type of transplant is done through a small incision, and the transplant is placed inside the eye and then is sealed in place with a bubble of air that holds it in place overnight. A full thickness corneal transplant is done for scarring or a condition called keratoconus. And that type of transplant is actually manually sewn in place with 16 very tiny microscopic sutures that hold the new then window in place for patients. And then the third type of transplant that we do is done in more severe cases where our normal or regular types of transplants don't take. It's called a keratoprosthesis, and it's part artificial, part human. That is done much more rarely, but is an option for people that have had a transplant at least two or three times that has not taken.
Yeah. When I had that, I did the second one, if I'm not mistaken. You were sewing those those 16 little stitches. One interesting thing for me was getting a note from the hospital about sending a note to the family of the person who gave me that precious thing. And of course, you don't know the person, you're not told, and the family doesn't know you or who you are. But I sat down and wrote a letter to the family, and much appreciated that person and what she did for me. And I think it's something that if you're in that situation, I highly encourage anyone to write that letter.
Larry, I'm so glad you did that, because I know through my communication with the Lions Eye Bank of Wisconsin that that is so meaningful to donor families. So corneal transplants are living tissue, but they are harvested from somebody who unfortunately died. And again, anonymity of the donor is maintained, but it is very lovely for families who helped with that generous donation gift to learn that their loved one's cornea was put to use.
Yeah. And frankly, I've felt like I gained something from it too. From writing the letter was useful for me.
Wonderful.
And I'll probably be seeing you soon. But in the meantime, thank you so much, Sarah, for being with us today. I really appreciate it. I hope we can do this again. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. Dr. Sarah Nels, ophthalmologist, professor at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. She's a really good ophthalmologist, in my humble opinion. And it's always fun to have her on the show. And coming up, we're going to take a look at resources for people who are blind or visually impaired. That next. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.